I want to talk this morning, and it's not a normal kind of message. It's not a three-point message. So if you're looking for a three-point sermon this morning, you'll be disappointed. I do have 6 points coming up later, so you can look forward to that. But it's really a few thoughts that God sort of laid on my heart and been talking to me about over the last few weeks, which I hope fits in with where we're at. I think it does. So it's just a sort of few thoughts and a few ramblings, if you like, but a few points at the end. So that's where we're heading this morning. A few weeks ago, about a month ago, Rich Penske, looking nervous already. It's fine, it's okay. It's okay. Rich mentioned, I was talking at Easter, and he got a few of us at the front. If you can remember, I was one of those, and we all sat on chairs, and we played a game. And the game we played was called Freeman, Hardy and Willis. So who was here on Easter? Anyone here on Easter? Many of you. Some of you will have remembered that game or may have even played it in your youth, if not before. And indeed, I did. And I said to Rich afterwards, this is quite funny because the first time I ever played that game, and possibly the last time I played that game before that day, was at a youth camp. Way back when I was probably 14 or so. So just sort of, you know, like 7 years ago or so. We played that game amongst a few others, including Wink Murder, where I discovered I couldn't wink. And it was more of a massacre, because I winked at everybody at the same time. Kind of like. But we played that game, and it reminded me of that time way back then as a 14-year-old boy on a youth camp. And that youth camp was in a place called Biblins. If anyone's ever been to Biblins, there's a Biblins Lodge, it's a youth, this Forestry Commission own it, it's a youth camp or cabin, and there's a bridge called Biblins Bridge. And we went there every year for sort of 3 or 4 years as a youth group. And then a few weeks ago, Sue shared, was sharing, leading the meeting, she shared something Nikki Goodway had shared with a few of us in the pub, and the words used were suddenly always comes after gradually. And again, God spoke to me at that point and said, it reminded me of these youth camps where I'd been way back when I was younger. You see, the reason what God reminded me of was actually I went to youth camp from about the age of 12 all the way through. So for maybe 3 or 4 years at Biblins and then another year at a place called Clearbury in the sort of Worcestershire area. And I went along and I had a really great time. I heard loads of good preaches and messages there. Every evening there was a sort of a time of worship and a word. And there was lots of good fun during the day and things. And I went to, not primary school, I did go to primary school sometimes. And I went to Sunday school, which is what I was going to say. And from about the age of 6 or 7. I heard lots of good messages there. Pete Gossage's dad was the vicar. Reverend Gossage, and we went there, and my memory of that is kind of like, I was much younger, so my memory of it is a little bit jaded, perhaps, or I remember doing about David and Goliath, and in my mind we did it every week. I know we didn't, but that's what I remember. But we did lots of things where we cut stuff out, and we used split pins, and that's about the extent of my memory of those times back then. I came to church sometimes. I even raised my hand in worship. I can remember the song. I first raised my hands in worship. Father God, I wonder how I managed to exist without the knowledge of your parenthood. It drones on. Sin goes on. It doesn't drone. It goes on. And that's, I remember the first time I did that. And so I pray and I talk to God. And I knew him. And I believe that he knew me. But I wasn't a Christian. A little bit like Grandad Ron shared last week when he said, you know, he talked to God but didn't know him fully. And it was only then, when I was 16, did I actually become a Christian. Did I say to God, well, I'm going to follow you and I want you to be king in my life. So you see, for me, it was a gradual process. There was 4 years before the suddenly of my salvation. And so I was reminded of that. And a little bit like Ron said last week, when he became a Christian, he was skipping down the road. I remember skipping back down through the porter cabins that we were staying in, feeling like I was drunk. I'd become a Christian. I'd been filled with the Spirit. And the only way I can describe it was that I was drunk in the Lord. And it was great. So I totally get that. So I've been encouraged by the messages that we've been hearing because they've all been sort of feeding back into me these sorts of things. But I want to take you back to this time at Biblins, okay? This is where I want to start my message, if you like. So Biblins is a log cabin near the River Wye in the Forest of Dean. It's got three primary sections, a middle section, and there was like a girls' dorm at one end with a sort of an upstairs room. And then there was a big, in the middle, double-story sort of section, you know, like the hall here, really. And at the other end was a boys' dorm. And the boys' dorm had a loft hatch and a loft area. Now, I could tell you stories about how the boys worked out that if we went into the loft hatch, there was another hatch which brought us into the main room. You could shimmy across the beams while the leaders were eating their tea and drinking wine and go into the girls' dorm, and they were oblivious to it because we'd gone that way, they'd gone that way, but yet we could meet in the middle somewhere. I'm not going to tell you that story. But we were quite ingenuitive. But I do want to tell you a story about what was next to Biblins. There was a big grassed area next to the river. And we'd go down there and we'd play football or rugby or bulldogs. Anyone play British bulldogs ever? It involves two teams running at each other and colliding in the middle. A little bit like rugby, but without a ball. And basically we played any game that had a good chance that one of our friends, Steve, was going to break a limb. Anything that involved Steve breaking an arm or a leg or a collarbone, we would play. And every year, every time he went away, sure enough, he probably named a ward after him. This guy went to hospital continuously with broken limbs. So we had a great time, and we did this for a little while, and it got a bit boring. And one of our friends, Phil, who's the son of Mark and Rhoda, who have been to church a few times, Mark's the guy who comes and talks about Israel trips. His son, Phil, says, I've got something we can do that my dad taught me. And we're like, okay. And he taught us to make an arrow, okay, a throwing arrow. And if anyone's ever seen a throwing arrow, basically you get the straightest piece of stick about this sort of long, and you put flights in the end, and you put a point on the other end with a pencil sharpener, like an arrow. And you put a notch at the end, and then you get a bit of string. I'll just check who's in here. Right, Alfie's not in here. You put a notch in a bit of string. Sorry, no, you put a loop in a bit of string at either end. You put your finger through one end. You put the loop on the other end of the arrow, and you hold the tip of the arrow, and you kind of throw the arrow. It's a little bit of a cross between David and Goliath meets Robin Hood. But after a while, you can get this arrow to really fly. Okay, you're kind of slingshotting the arrow, and after a few days of practice, we could get these things to go about 100 metres. This like solid bit of wood with a sharp point on the end. So that went on for a few days, and on the last day we thought, do you know what? We were able to go down in the morning. We'd been told we were going on a hike in the afternoon, and we thought, well, we'll just get rid of these arrows. We can't take them back to Bristol. You can't be lobbing a 100-metre arrow around in central Bristol. So let's get rid of them. So like every sensible boy thought, what should we do? Let's see if we can get it across the river. It's the River Wye. If you don't know the River Wye, it's a really wide river. So we all turned. And rather than somebody having a sort of test shot, we thought, let's all go for it together. And now the river's not 100 metres wide, so clearly we didn't think that easy to get across. And we all simultaneously launched these arrows. And it was a little bit like a scene from Game of Thrones or any Roman invasion where you see maybe 10 arrows go across the river in unison, straight across the river, flying into the woods on the opposite side. Amazing. Great. What could possibly have gone wrong? At which point, three unsuspecting walkers, let's call them Mr. and Mrs. Berghouse, came out of the trees on the opposite side. You know, they weren't stabbed, I will say that. None of them had an arrow in their chest. None of them have got a testimony about how they'd go outdoors card to save their lives. That was the sort of person. They came out, and we did, you know, we were good Christian boys, so we did what every good Christian boy would do, and ran away laughing. But in all seriousness, we could have quite conceivably killed them all. And I wouldn't be here, and I would have met David Powell at a much earlier age as part of his prison ministry. But that didn't happen. Anyway, so that's the story. Anyway, get back to the bridge, because that's the bridge, that's just the side, sort of. The bridge. Okay, this bridge is a wooden bridge. It goes across, it's about so wide, about a metre wide, and it goes across the river in a big sort of sagging, sort of chained, on chains between these two timber structures at either end. Perfectly safe, although made of timber, so you have a feeling that it's completely unsafe. And later in the afternoon, we went for a walk. We walked across the bridge, and we went off on this walk. It was lovely. Walked back through the woods where the arrows were. Nobody didn't find anybody on the floor or anything, so we were good. And then we got back. Now, When we got back, the girls refused to come onto the bridge with the boys. I don't know why, but they did. So the boys walked across the bridge first, and we got to the other side, and then we heard the girls coming on behind us. And again, like every good Christian boy, we immediately turned around, ran back onto the bridge and started jumping up and down and shaking this bridge. And this bridge is probably 25 metres long, metre wide over the river. And this thing's rocking, we're rocking it side to side. It's going up and down, the girls are screaming. You know, we could hear the girls screaming, then we could see the leaders on the side and they're kind of going, let's go, whoa. And we're like, yeah, they're scared, we know. Jump up and down, they're going, and they really stop. And we're jumping up and down. And we realised that the sound of screaming was like in stereo. And what we didn't realise was that it wasn't the girls screaming the loudest in front of us. When we turned around, there were three people, strangely dressed in burkas. The same three people that we tried to kill earlier in the day. One of which was led flat on the floor in the middle of this thing, screaming. The other two were clinging onto it, and they were screaming. So we did what every good Christian lad would do and just ran away again and let the leaders deal with it. But the thing is, that's just a funny story, but the fact is, I love rocking things. If you put me on, don't ever go on a boat with me, a small boat. Even if it's a big boat, I try and encourage everybody to, like, on a ferry, let's all run to that side and see what happens. We run across. I love boats when they rock. I've been on some great, you know, ferry crossings where it's been rocking side to side. Everyone's been feeling a bit queasy. You know, if you tip a tin of baked beans, you know, like get some beans and dump it on the stairs, it does look like somebody's thrown up. But you can just have so much fun on a rocking boat. You know, a canoe, get on a canoe, you want to rock it. Maybe you don't want to rock it, but I love it. And so I love rocking boats and bridges. So if anyone wants to come on a walk to the Forest of Dean with me, we can all go and rock the bridge. And that's what I'm talking about this morning, about rocking boats. Okay, it's part of my nature that I rock boats. Those that know me know I love to do something. I love to do anything that nobody expects me to do. It's just the best thing. Does anyone else feel like that sometimes? You're expected to act in a certain way, so you purposely do the opposite. Anyone? Three of you put your hands up. Great. That's unsuspected compared to normal weeks. So you do, but I love it. Ed does it, I know. Ed's mischievous. Pete's the same. Rich Penske's very similar. Rich Brown's very similar. What could possibly go wrong when we're in Africa later in the year? But we do. I love rocking the boat. So, you know, when we were in Africa, Pete and I were in the front. We have control of the stereo. Fantastic. Evans, bless him, gets 12 hours of the Wurzels, punctuated by the odd bit of VeggieTales. And we have a good sing-song on the way. And he just looks there, what is going on? I have no idea. Asleep, mostly, yes. So that's me. Now, at work, we do assessments, psychological assessments and psychometric assessments as well. And one of the ones we use is called Thomas. I'm not going to read it all to you. But it was worryingly accurate when they did it on me. I'm going to read just a few of the words they used to describe me. Outgoing, gregarious, friendly, independent, self-starter, socially competitive, assertive, mobile, active, impatient, impulsive, quick, asks who and what in that order. And it was worryingly accurate. And when they did it, they do like a stress test version as well, where they see how you react under stress. Mine came back, it literally said, Dave does not change in any way, shape or form, either at work or under stress. I'm the same, take it or leave it. If you don't like it, tough, that's who I am. And so it is really accurate, but it did say that I love challenging the stereotypes. And this is what comes out in the report. It said I love challenging norm. And that's just who I am. But I really do believe that... that's how God made me. He made me to challenge stereotypes, challenge norms. And that's what Jesus did, wasn't it? Jesus challenged religious leaders at the time. You know, they were full of rules and laws, and Jesus challenged those. He saved people, you know, and healed people on the Sabbath, and he went around. He turned the tables over in the temple. He associated with the poor, the unclean, prostitutes, tax collectors, stinking fishermen. Just what anyone you would not normally want to associate with, Jesus did. He would have been a PR nightmare. Can you imagine being Jesus' PR man? It would have been horrendous. You know, what have you done now? It's like, you know, it makes Donald Trump look positively sensible in the way Jesus associated with people. It truly rocked the boat. Nicky, a few weeks ago, said we had to have a voice for the voiceless. You know, you can't do that if you're not prepared to speak up. If you're not prepared sometimes to rock the boat. You've got to stand up for the poor and the helpless. We need to be more Jesus. A bit like the TV advert. Who likes the TV advert for We Buy Any Car? Do you know what their catchphrase is?
WeBuyAnyCar.com.
That's the one. but do you know what their current advertising slogan is? Be More Schofield. And they've got Philip Schofield on it, and their thing is like, Be More Schofield. So this morning, we need to be not more Schofield, but more Jesus. I read an amazing story this week about a lady. And she was she worked in a restaurant, she owned a restaurant, and every morning they'd in the street that they lived on, there were loads of various shops and things, there was homeless people in their doors. And they would have to move the homeless person away in order to open their restaurants. And this one particular morning, she got up and she got there and this homeless guy was asleep. And but she, knowing that she was short staffed that day, she said to him, look, how do you want to earn some money? Earn some food today, get some fed, but we need to do some work. This guy was like, absolutely. So she got him in and she got him in the kitchen and she got him just washing dishes in a restaurant for the day. And she fed him and she paid him at the end of the day. And the next day, when she got to the restaurant, the guy had already cleared up. He cleared up all his stuff. It was already there. He was sitting there. And she said, oh, do you want to work again? And he said, yeah, absolutely. So he went and he did it again. And the word of this got around and it made it onto the news and things. And then within their street, somebody else heard that this had happened. So they thought, well, do you know what? Maybe I'll give that a go. And they offered the homeless guy in their shop window or doorstep to maybe he wanted to work. And all of a sudden, almost all these shops, I think they said 80% of all the shops in this street have a homeless person working for them. Just working in the kitchen, working in the warehouse, just doing little tasks, but getting paid for it and getting fed. And all of a sudden, they don't have this problem anymore. They don't have this street. People are now flocking to this street because they know, you know, they'll come in and they'll go to these restaurants because they know there's a homeless guy there. So people are travelling across state in America to get to these restaurants, little diddy restaurants. They're rammed. So their business has gone through the roof because they've been prepared to rock the boat and do something good for somebody. That's something which got, you know, good national, international news, really. It was in America. I read it here. But it can be something really simple. A few weeks ago in the supermarket, I usually walk to Morrison's at work. And I walked to Morrison's that one particular day and bought my lunch. And I have a... normally I pay on my card, but this particular day I wanted to raid the vending machine in the afternoon, so I paid with some money. I had my emergency £5 in the back of my phone, which I got out, and I paid, and I had £2 change. And I came out, I paid my money, and I wanted to walk back. I've only got a short lunch break, and I'm walking back, and in front of me is this little old lady with one of those shopping trolleys, you know, like the rectangle things. So she's there, and she's sort of bent over like this, and she's sort of doing this. At the supermarket, and there's not much space, and I'm kind of behind, sort of going, I've got to go back for lunch, you know, you're in the way, love. Nice as you are, and all that. And I sort of like scooted past her in a little gap, got past her, and I felt Jesus say to me, you need to be more Schofield. No, I didn't. Actually, I did, but I knew what he meant, you know, I felt God say to me, you need to be more Jesus. So I got to the next checkout, and on the end of the checkout, there was a bucket. And in that bucket, they were selling, you know, like the daffodils. And they're like £1 a bunch. I don't know, they might have been £1 a bunch. I didn't ask, if I'm honest. Could have been £2, which is embarrassing. So I just grabbed a bunch. There's a lady being served. I grabbed a bunch of daffodils, gave £1 to the checkout woman and said, thanks ever so much. Didn't stop. So I'm hoping they weren't £2. And I just turned around to this little old lady, put them on top of a trolley, because she was like that, and just went, oh, they're for you. And then just went home, went back to the office. I never spoke to her. She could have been allergic to daffodils, for all I know. But I just wanted to bless her. Something really simple. It cost me £1. Hopefully, she was blessed. Hopefully, some random good-looking guy bought some daffodils in a supermarket, and she went home blessed. But it's something really simple. But it was rocking the boat, because I know people around me saw what happened. And I didn't stop. I didn't say, oh, do you know Jesus? And she, oh yes, great, those are the daffodils for you. Those, you know, those, they're just for you. And that was all I said and walked away. Plain and simple. You know, the lady in the shop with the homeless guy, it's a bit like the Leland song. Does everyone know the Leland song, Great Awakening? It's from it's based on a poem about George Whitefield and Jonathan Edwards. In the 1700s, it says, one man wakes, awakens another. Second man wakes, his next door brother. Three men awake, rise a town, and turn the whole place upside down. She was awoken, and what she did turned the whole town upside down. She rocked the boat. And rocking the boat's about shaking society and shouting, wake up sometimes. It's not about physically rocking a boat. I don't want you all to go out there and all go down to the docks and jump on someone's boat and start running around and rocking it. But it's about challenging the community around you, challenging the status quo. We've got a poverty crisis. We've got a moral compass that's completely broken. Family breakdown. People are being crushed by financial, emotional, and broken relationships, but we can make a difference. Many of you watch Drugsland. How many of you watch Drugsland? Many of you? Some of you helped at the night shelter. And helped at the night shelter? I can't put my hand up for that one. A few of you. And you've all done your bit to shake it. But do you know really how bad it is? I think you might be shocked if you saw the reality. What you see on telly is a dumbed down version. They can't show the truth. It's like when you see war reporting, you never actually see the reality. When you're at the night shelter, it's kind of, you're kind of protected. The people that you see are, they're in need, absolutely. But they're possibly not the most needy. It just wouldn't be safe. For a long time, I worked in Stokes Croft. No kids, good. And I witnessed some horrific things when I was working there. Stokes Croft is on the edge of St Paul's, if you don't know. I witnessed prostitution in the car park of our office. There are times when I wanted to go home at the end of the day, and before I could get my car at the car park, I had to bang on the glass of somebody who was, for want of a phrase, on the job, and ask them to move. The look you get is hilarious. They look at you and go, well, do you mind? As if you're putting them out. But that's the reality. You couldn't get a car at the car park without getting somebody else to move first. It's a bit more gross, but we had street drinkers who took a poo in the bushes out of our windows. Literally, as close as a vow is to me, to my boss's desk. Glass window, she looked out as a guy in the bushes. You see, sometimes when you give money to the homeless, can't you? We've done that. So many of us have done that. You can get some food, or you can give them money so they can buy food, or they can get a bed for the night. And you can help. You can give time, or you can just be kind to someone. You can help at the shelter. Or maybe you've got a more sceptical view. You've got to read on Facebook, haven't you, the things on there. Facebook is the world's worst place for scepticism. Maybe it's a more realistic view. That's their thoughts. Maybe that rather than buying food, when you give money to a homeless person, they go and buy drugs with it. They buy drugs for the money you gave them for food or to pay for a room for the night. So the question I've got for you, do you still give it? Think about this. Maybe because you do give them money, they do go and buy drugs. And because they buy drugs, they don't sleep with a businessman in the car park outside my office. They don't sell themselves. The businessman doesn't catch something he's ashamed of, and he doesn't get arrested. He doesn't lose his job, his family, his home, and his entire reason to live. Your £5 that you gave that homeless person could save a marriage, could save a life. Maybe you don't give to the homeless person direct. Maybe you go to a food bank. You give food there. Maybe a young mum whose husband's no longer around because his life got too much for him following an incident in a car park can feed her kids. Maybe she doesn't need to sell herself to the guy next door for a tenner a time, and maybe her kids grow up safe and secure without the need for an endless string of uncles. They don't run away and they don't find themselves living on the street, and the cycle doesn't start again. Now, I'm not saying you have to give money. I'm not saying that's the case every time. We don't know, do we? But we need to rock the boat. We need to sometimes just do something and not worry about the what. Just know about the why, and the why is what your heart is. Got to rock social expectation and be more Jesus. So let's have a look then. My 6 points about what it is to be a boat rocker as opposed to the opposite, which is a boat faller. Number one, we need to be mission focused and not me focused. Matthew 21, starts with this. As they approached Jerusalem and came to Bethpage on the Mount of Olives, Jesus said to the disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and at once you'll find a donkey tied there with her colt by her. Untie them and bring them to me. If anyone says anything to you, say that the Lord needs them, and he will send them right away." This took place to fulfill what was being spoken through the prophet. See, Jesus was mission-focused when he rode a donkey into Jerusalem. He didn't do it because it was a comfort-based choice. I'm guessing a donkey wasn't the best option. Probably was more comfortable to have walked. He also had a lot of people with him, and he didn't go in and say, "Go and get 20 donkeys, because it's a long way, we all need to ride." If the disciples walked, I'm pretty confident Jesus could have walked. But he did it because he knew he was fulfilling a prophecy. He did it because he knew he was about mission. And actually, the prophets had said he was going to ride in a donkey, so he knew by doing that he was fulfilling that prophecy. So how do we do that? Do we go to work on a donkey? Some of us that work in Western could go to work on a donkey. Although I think if I went to work on a donkey, I wouldn't be going back on the donkey, because a donkey probably wouldn't be too well. But let's bring it down to a human level. There's a guy I read about this week, Jose Rizal. Spelled J-O-Z-E. Is that Jose? I'm going to go for. And he said this. He said, "As God has not made anything useless in this world, as all beings fulfill obligations or role in the sublime drama of creation, I cannot exempt from this duty. And small though it be, I too have a mission to fill. As, for example, alleviating the suffering of my fellow men." Now, anyone ever heard of Jose Rizal? None of you? Shocking. You should all know that he was a Filipino ophthalmologist. And he was key in the Filipino propaganda movement during colonial Spain. And he advocated political reforms in the colony. And more interestingly, he was executed by the Spanish following the rebellion. And he was executed for the crime of rebellion. But he was a boat rocker. He did a lot of things which actually made the Philippines get their independence. Okay, so let's bring it down. We're not all going to be, you know, have the ability to bring down a colonial occupation. So let's bring it down to a regular guy on the street. You might have seen it as a guy, another guy in America, who was going out to buy some trainers. And he got to the shop, and it was a different street to the shop I mentioned earlier, the restaurants. But he got to the shop, and with, I think he had like £90 in his pocket, and he stepped over this guy who was asleep in the doorway. And as he stepped over him, he said, "Look, excuse me, are you homeless?" And it's kind of one of those questions where I have to say, when I watched it, because they kind of recreated what had happened that first part, there's a guy sleeping in a doorway, and he asked him, "Are you homeless?" Maybe slightly obvious, but nevertheless, he asked him, "Are you homeless?" And this guy says, "Yeah, I am." And he says, "Oh, would you like some food?" And the guy says, "Oh, that'd be great, thanks." He says, "Okay, get your stuff. Let's go and get some food." So he gets up and he goes and buys this guy some food. And then they start to record, his mate is with him, starts to film the whole thing and live. So now the first bit's recreated, the rest of it's the real thing. And he says to him, "I'm going to go and buy some trainers." He said, "But do you need any trainers?" And the homeless guy says, "Oh, well, yeah." And his feet are, he's in tatters. He says, "Okay, let's go and buy you some trainers." So he goes and buys the homeless guy's trainers. He says, "Look, you can't be wearing nice new trainers with, like, awful clothes. So let's go and buy some clothes." So they go to the shop and he buys him jogging bottoms and a T-shirt and a hoodie and new. And he says, "Oh, you need a haircut as well. You look a right tramp." And this guy, well, you know, I'm on the streets. And he's got long hair and a massive beard. And they go to his barbers and they take him in there and they get him a haircut. And he has his beard shaved. He's now clean shaven. He's got short hair. He's pretty much unrecognisable. He says, "Right, now we need to get your shower." So they go into the supermarket and he buys some soap and he buys some shower gel and shampoo. And he says, "Right, now we need to find you a shower." So he like goes into various hotels and bars and says, "Look, excuse me, we've got a shower here." You know, like, "Well, no, not really." You know, and he eventually gets this guy a shower. And then you see them like, just walking down the road together chatting. And this homeless guy is completely unrecognisable. And at the end, he turns around and he goes, "I'll just have to wait till tomorrow for my trainers." And that was it. So he completely changed his thinking. And he completely spent every penny he had, all £90 he was going to spend on his trainers, or $90, whatever it was, on this guy. Just went out of his way. And for me, that's where he went from being me-focused when he went out in the morning, I'm going to buy myself some trainers, to be mission-focused. And he said, at the end, he said, I just realised that I needed to portray the life that I wanted to live. I wanted to do it. I couldn't just sit at home and say, I want to be this person and not do something about it. So when I stepped over this guy, I just had to do what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be. So ask yourself, are you more mission-focused or me-focused? Second point, are you passionate or are you angry? There's a difference. Difference one is about doing something and the other is about stopping doing something. I'm not saying there's never a time to be angry, but just ask yourself, why are you angry? In the film Braveheart, have anyone seen Braveheart? It's Mel Gibson, isn't it? Plays, I don't know the guy, is it Robert Bruce?
William Wallace.
William Wallace. It's Scotland, I'm not that worried if I'm honest. And he's going for independence up there. And in all seriousness, you see him and he's like screaming, but I don't think he's angry. He's not angry, he's just passionate about the plight of his people. And there's a real difference. He's got a cause. He's not just going against it and saying, I don't like this, but I've got no other option. He's passionate about his people being free. To ask yourself, are you a passionate person or you're an angry person? Number three, keep perspective and stop complaining. In the midst of a tough battle in World War II, General Patton, one of the greatest military leaders of all time, said this about battle. God, I love it. King David, also a warrior, said, God, I love you. Whose army would you rather be in? David's world of work and his passion for God were integrated. He said, God is my rock, my stronghold, my refuge, and my saviour. 2 Samuel 22, verse 3. He relied totally on God. If your passion for God were to be revealed in your sphere of work or study, what would people say about you? Would they say that God is your rock and your stronghold, that you're passionate about getting things done? Or would they say that you never stop complaining? Rocking the boat's not about complaining. It's about doing something different that makes a positive difference. Fourth point. Are you optimistic or are you pessimistic? Similar to the one before a bit. If you like, is your glass half empty or half full? I've got a colleague at work who is, I wouldn't say he's pessimistic. His glass isn't half empty, it's more smashed. Every opportunity, what he portrays is his negative, feelings. If you said to him, it's Frank, he's not called Frank, but Frank, you've won the lottery. He would say, oh my gosh, I've got to go to the post office now. that's the sort of person he is. He wouldn't say, oh fantastic, I can bless somebody or I can buy something that I need. He'd complain that he has to go and collect it. As strangely, it's not, I don't think, what he's like inside. That's just what he portrays. Joshua 1 verse 9, have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous, do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. There's an old song we used to sing, which some of you remember, back in those days in Biblins, we used to sing this song, be bold, be strong, for the Lord your God is with you. Anyone remember that one? Carry on, because I'm going to read it if you don't sing it. Indeed, I am not dismayed, because I'm walking in faith and victory. Come on, walk in faith and victory, for the Lord your God is with you. And I just wondered when I was writing that, do we walk in faith and victory? Or do we walk around complaining a lot? Do you join in with people around you when they're complaining? Or do you rock the boat and input some positivity? Do you say, well, just stop moaning for a bit. Why don't you actually look at what's going on around you and look at the good things for once? I do that sometimes in the office. I get away with it because it's me. And they kind of expect it. But even this week, I had to do exactly that. They were moaning about something. I said, I'll just stop moaning for 5 minutes. If you don't like it, leave. You know, or I put my headphones on. Sometimes I listen, put my headphones on, I listen when I'm working. And I open up YouTube in the background on my laptop and I'll play some playlists and things. It's like all the songs that we sang at New Wine are on there and they're playing away. And one of my colleagues said to me, you know, you're always like whistling or humming or something. It's really annoying. And it's because I've got the music on. I kind of forget. And a few times I've completely forgotten and started to sing. And then my colleague like tapped me on the shoulder and just go, shut up. But I can't help it. And sometimes really, really complaining. Just have to say, shut up. Be bold. And tell them just to be quiet. Stop moaning. My mum used to always say to me, there's always somebody worse off than you. So I've got a question for you. Look around yourselves. You don't have to answer this, just in case you give me the right answer. Give yourself a pinch. Are you dead? No. So there's always someone worse off. Am I right? There's always someone who's worse off than you. So don't complain. Look at the positives. You're still breathing. You've still got time to make it right. Number five. Getting to the end. Are you energy generating or energy sapping? A few weeks ago in our small group, we were talking about how we could be more missional. And we were talking about the ideas of things that we could do and we'll get involved in. And they were all things that make people sit up and take notice. They were boat-rocking ideas. As we talked about them, we started to get excited, well, I did, and about the possibilities. And we started to allow things to run ahead. You know, and it went from, we were talking about when we gave Easter eggs and things into the community. And then we went from that to, well, what else could we give? Maybe we could give live chickens, you know, next Easter. And kind of, I got a bit carried away maybe, and Pete encouraged me. But by the end of it, you know, it was infectious. It was a place of joy. We were talking about all the things we could do, how we could ultimately take over French Egg. And the whole of Bristol, and it was going to spread, and then, you know, and we're going, but it was just exciting because it was energy generating. And have you ever had that conversation where you start chatting, one person starts laughing? There's a you know, clip. Have you ever sat? When you go to the dentist, it's deathly quiet, isn't it? I hate it. Anywhere where it's really quiet just makes me giggle. So if I'm at a dentist and it's really quiet, I start to giggle. I can't help myself. And then people look at you like you're mental. Because you're about to go into the dentist and you're laughing. You're not even reading anything. So I get magazines now, just hold it. I'm not reading it. I've got my reading glasses on. I can't see a thing. It's just a blur. But at least they think I'm reading if I start laughing. But if you sit in a quiet place, or just go on the bus. I dare any of you to do this. It's your challenge. Go on the bus and then just start laughing out loud. Just start laughing loudly. And then, and just keep doing it. I promise you, by the time you get to work, the whole bus will be laughing. Probably at you, but they will be laughing. But they will be laughing because it's energy generating. You know, and you can laugh at anything. There's a guy we were watching. Anyone see Britain's Got Talent last night? A few of you, there's a guy, I've seen him before, called Lost Voice Guy. There's a guy who severely disabled. He can't speak. So he's a stand-up comedian. He does his entire thing through a voice synthesizer. Like a voice generated thing. He does a stand-up routine. He just laughs at himself. You know, he says, I'm a stand-up comedian. He struggles to stand up. You know, he said, when I first lost my voice, I was speechless. You know, those sorts of things. And he goes on and on and on. He told a great joke at the end. You've got to go and watch it. I'm not going to tell you the jokes. It's funny, but it's worth watching. But he's energy generating. He's in like his situation. He can't speak. You know, he can barely walk, but he's got a smile from ear to ear, and he made the whole place laugh, to the point where Simon Cowell described him as the funniest comedian they've had on the series ever. You know, he's energy generating. Number six. I've got seven, I lied. Do you see only possibilities or see only problems? The difference is simply how you look at things. The antidote to a problem is a promise. And the Bible's full of promises. God hates to be doubted, but he loves to be trusted. If you want to see God working in your life again, replug yourself into the promises he's made for you. Numbers 23:19. God is not a man, so he does not lie. is not human, so has not changed his mind. Has never spoken or failed to act. Has he ever promised and not carried it through? Has he ever promised and not carried it through? You know, sometimes it takes a while, but God always comes good on his promises. So what does God promise? Well, Jeremiah 32:17 says, O Lord God, behold, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power, and by your outstretched arm, nothing is too difficult for you. Whatever situation we find ourselves in is not too big for God. Matthew 19:26, and looking at them, Jesus said to them, with people this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. So whatever situation you find yourself in, see the possibilities, profess opportunity, look for opportunity to make a positive difference to the people you come into contact with. Number 7. I put 2 together so we didn't have 8, just so you're aware. I was thinking about you. Attracting others or alienating others, together or alone. Now, it's easy to think that if you like to rock the boat, people won't want to be around you. That's just not the case. If you're a true boat rocker, then you'll attract others. They'll be attracted to your positive energy, your positive outlook on life, your ability to see opportunities when others see problems. Jesus went around rocking the boat, yet he attracted followers for fun. At last count, around 2.3 billion. If we're prepared to rock the boat, I believe we'll make a real difference in our community and in our city. We'll challenge perception. People have a perception of young people that they're lazy, that they're around causing antisocial behaviour. So when a few hundred get together for the noise, it rocks the boat. You know, we don't put anything at work on our internal systems, our news feeds and things that is overtly religious, because in a politically correct world, if you put something, then you have to put something for everybody else. You know, if you said, oh, we got involved with this activity, which was church-led, you'd have to say, then list everything else you did, which wasn't church-led. But it was interesting that this week, somebody posted this great thing about community partnership working. It's like the buzzword, partnership working. And they post this, these photographs of somebody doing gardening work at Junction 3 and the library in Easton. And I, those pictures, and they just put how amazing it was to be working in partnership with Bristol City Council and the residents at Junction 3. And they put these photos up. And in these photos, at least 50% of the people were wearing bright green T-shirts. So I thought, I'm not having any of that. So I'm going to rock the boat. I went, great to see partnership working. It's amazing. And who to think, 1,400 young people from all the churches came together across Bristol to do this for us. And I posted a link to the Hope website and a big picture of the explanation about what Hope was about. Do you know, I got no likes whatsoever. It's like an internal Facebook. Not one, but do you know what? I don't care. It's not about that. I wanted people to know what that was really about. Yeah, we were working in partnership, but we were working in partnership with the church. And we're Christian young people who are out there digging. And there's a great photo of a little boy in a wheelbarrow asleep. And that was the front thing. That's all people commented on. What a great photo. But I wanted to rock the boat. So it's our turn to rock the boat. It's our turn to show the world that the gospel is in action. Show love, show compassion, show Jesus. And let's have faith for the next billion followers of Jesus. So let's finish with one last thought. Mark 12:30-31. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this. Love your neighbour as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. So I want to ask you some questions you don't need to answer, but I might just for the purposes of the tape. How many of you clothed yourself this morning? All of them. How many of you fed yourselves this morning? How many of you, when your back's against the wall, will fight your cause? So if we are to love our neighbour as ourselves, should we not be prepared to clothe them, to feed them, or fight for them? Amen?